Visit worldwildlife.org.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Thursday, October 22nd, 2015, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us. We've got a great live show for you, coming to you direct from Potland, Oregon. My good friend and fellow Red State refugee is in the house, Lindsay Reinhart. Say hello to the world.
Hi.
There you go. Getting close on that mic there, girl. There you go. Now they know you're here. And we've got other guests, and you're going to unmute them so that they can be heard. But first, we've got Teresa Collins. Teresa, how are you doing today?
I'm doing awesome.
Great to hear from you. And who else do we have here on in the studio?
You got Lee Haywood, Cannabis Emissary.
There we go.
Joshua Bird, Green Rush Events, Kena.
Jessica Jansen with Canna Farm Co-op.
Right on. So glad to have you all in the studio here, and we'll get a chance to talk to you as we get toward the end of the show. We'll open things up, and in the second hour, we'll also take our live calls at 844-420 Radio. That's toll-free from anywhere on the North American continent, 844-207-2346, 844-420 Radio. We'll take those calls in hour two, and we're going to talk about Oregon legalization. We're going to talk about what's going on in Alaska. You know, we don't really hear a lot from Alaska here in the media. What's going on up there, Teresa?
We're not getting enough attention, and that's what we're doing. We're trying to be ambassadors with the other states to talk about what's going on in Alaska.
That's right. All right, so we'll get some news from Alaska. And Lindsay, you've been following things going on the local level in Portland and Oregon in general, so we'll have plenty to talk about, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
All right, so we'll get to that in just a bit, but we've got other segments here on the show that we are waiting for. Of course, every other Thursday, we visit with law enforcement against prohibition in a segment we call Cops Say Legalize Drugs. Joining us in the Cops Say Legalize Drugs segment today, we have Robert Guest. He's a former prosecutor in Texas, Kaufman, Texas, so I'm sure he'll have all sorts of perspective on why we need to end this futile prohibition of drugs. Futile and harmful prohibition of drugs, we should say. Also coming up on the show today, we're going to have a mini radical rant because we've got so many live guests in the studios. I can't do a full extended rant. Not enough time, but we'll do a mini rant on how activists may be becoming marginalized or irrelevant in the conversation to legalize marijuana, especially in California. Going to give you some updates on who's got the big bucks and how they're going to spend them. Also, we'll have a behind the headlines today where we go back to our home state of Idaho, Lindsay. Idaho will let 25 kids use pharmaceutical CBD. What do you think?
I think that sounds like a burning bus for people that are not getting the treatment that they need with improper medical care.
There we go.
But that's Idaho, improper medical care.
Exactly. So we're going to talk about how Idaho is a cruel island surrounded now by states that endorse some form of medical marijuana, even if it's just CBD only. Even Utah's on board. Man, that's pretty sad when Idaho's lagging behind Utah. But all of that comes right after this first break in the 420 Radio News. And in the headlines today, the breathalyzer for pot, it's on its way. We'll tell you when and where. Bernie Sanders was on the Jimmy Kimmel Show. We'll say what he had to say about marijuana legalization. Kennewick, Washington, banning outdoor medical marijuana grows. We'll give you the details. Colorado banking, another roadblock from the Fed. And Southern Oregon, Jackson County, the smell of marijuana is just unbearable. All that coming up on the Russ Belville Show.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
You're tuned in to 420radio.org.
I'm Nick Lachey. Ohio is my home, and I care very deeply about the people here, which is why I'm proud to be a part of a movement that's going to create jobs, reinvigorate our economy, and improve the safety of our communities.
It'll give me a chance to open a business or a job to pay off my college loans.
And legalizing marijuana will provide tax revenue for local safety services. Let's do what the politicians haven't done. For marijuana legalization, vote no on 2 and yes on 3.
Imagine life without taxes. Let New Era Certified Public Accountants, NewEraCPAs.com, handle your Cannabis 280E and tax strategy. Get your business prepared with New Era CPA's Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. NewEraCPAs.com, with years of experience in the industry, we are one of the nation's leading accounting firms for growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies from Washington to California. NewEraCPAs.com. It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Replays of 420 Radio News are embeddable and shareable from our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/radicalruss. Now, the marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is your 420 Radio News for Thursday, October 22nd, 2015. Researchers at Washington State University say they think they are about a year away from having a portable breath test that police can use to detect if someone has recently consumed marijuana. Herbert Hill, a WSU chemistry professor working on the project, said his research team has completed its first round of testing of the marijuana breathalyzer and has made some improvements. The team is about to start a second round of testing, and Hill said he hopes to make the device available for police to use in the field sometime next year. While police would still need to get a warrant and draw a person's blood to see if they meet the legal definition of impairment under the state's marijuana laws, a breath test could be a more reliable way to detect marijuana impairment in the field than field sobriety tests that the officers use now. Though Donald Trump abruptly canceled his Jimmy Kimmel Live appearance earlier this week, the host still seized an opportunity to speak with a presidential candidate when Brooklyn native Bernie Sanders joined the host on Wednesday night's episode as Jimmy Kimmel's week-long residency at the Brooklyn Academy of Music continues. When Kimmel asked the presidential candidate where he stood on the legalization of marijuana, Sanders discussed the excessive amount of American citizens in prison for marijuana use and emphasized putting an end to the war on drugs, saying, quote, "I am not unfavorably disposed to moving forward toward the legalization of marijuana," end quote, Sanders told Kimmel. The host then added to the idea, suggesting that if Sanders is elected, he should have postal carriers deliver marijuana, making it simpler for everyone. Quote, "That'll get rid of the federal deficit pretty quickly, won't it?" end quote, Sanders joked in response. Many Kennewick, Washington medical marijuana growers will have to take it inside. The city council voted 4-1 on Tuesday evening to restrict so-called nuisance or outdoor marijuana grows that can be seen or smelled from adjacent public or private property. Several people spoke to the council before the vote, mostly telling stories about problems they face with out-of-control marijuana operations. They talked of neighbors with 45 plants towering 10 feet high, people carrying backpacks of pot out of grow houses, likely with the intent to sell it, nauseous smells, and rising crime. Quote, "I've never heard gunshots like I have the last 3 years," said Retha Sanders, who has lived in her home on 6th Avenue for 64 years. "I cannot have my windows down because of the smell," end quote. Diane Crawford, a candidate for city council, was the only member of the public to speak against the change. She said medical marijuana patients would have to spend at least $2,000 to move their operations inside. Colorado's attempt to create a bank to serve its marijuana industry has suffered another setback by the federal government and could be facing an impossible dilemma. The Federal Reserve, the guardian of the U.S. banking system, said in a court filing Wednesday that it doesn't intend to accept a penny connected to the sale of pot because the drug remains illegal under federal law. The stance appears to mark a shift in the position of the federal government. Last year, the U.S. Treasury Department issued rules for how banks could accept pot money. The filing came in a legal battle between the Federal Reserve and the would-be Fourth Corner Credit Union, which was set up last year to serve Colorado's $700 million a year marijuana industry. The Federal Reserve said in its filing that, quote, "transporting or transmitting funds known to have derived from the distribution of marijuana is illegal," end quote.
Many residents in rural Jackson County, Oregon, say their peaceful way of life is being threatened by people grabbing up land for marijuana grows. Quote, "We've got a little gold rush going on. People have their minds set on profit and getting fabulously rich," end quote, said Rich Fairbanks, who lives in the Applegate Valley near a marijuana grow with plants as tall as small trees. He said marijuana growers are buying up rural residential sites with water and power, displacing home buyers, and using up scarce well water. Rural resident Kathy Sabato says she lives within 100 yards of a medical marijuana grow. She and her husband feel they can no longer use their hot tub or host barbecues because the situation outdoors has become unbearable. Several other neighbors, including those in Sam's Valley and near Talent, said the smell of ripening marijuana is unbearable. This has been your 420 Radio News for Thursday, October 22nd, 2015. I'm Russ Belville.
The Russ Belville Show, where we don't change our position on decriminalization in an election year.
The Fingerboard Extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard Extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey, Wildwood, Gold Tone and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard Extension also has drum stuff, used gear and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com.
Yo, it's Kasky. I'm out here in Columbus, Ohio, letting y'all know that coming up November 3rd, we got a chance to legalize pot in Ohio. Huge step for the country, for the state. So I need everybody to get off your ass and go vote yes on issue 3, November 3rd. Don't be lazy. Let's make our country better. Let's make our people better. Let's start healing each other. Make the world a better place. Issue 3.
Idaho is what America was. That's a statement of pride for citizens of the Gem State who treasure pristine wilderness, Christian values, and conservative politics. Unfortunately, the statement also represents a stubborn clinging to America's marijuana prohibition that not only defies logic, but defies a simple human compassion for suffering children that all of Idaho's neighbors have come to recognize. It was announced last week that 25 children suffering severe epilepsy in Idaho may begin clinical trials this week with the GW Pharmaceuticals drug called Epidiolex, thanks to an executive order from Governor Butch Otter. GW's drug is a cannabidiol, or CBD product, meant to mimic the substantial success many parents have seen from treating their children with natural, whole plant-derived CBD oil in places like Colorado. However, Epidiolex is truly CBD only, with no psychoactive THC whatsoever. Most parents using CBD oils in the states that allow them are granted anywhere from 0.3% to up to 5% THC in the oil. Many parents find that CBD oil without higher levels of THC doesn't produce the relief from seizures that their children require. 25 children out of a possible 1,500 or more who could qualify in Idaho, will be granted this opportunity to end their suffering. To be one of the 25, the epileptic child must have already tried four other ineffective pharmaceutical medications. Some of the side effects from these medications include nausea, vomiting, dizziness, drowsiness, constipation, dry mouth, unsteadiness, mouth sores, swollen lymph nodes, persistent vomiting, severe stomach abdominal pain, yellowing eyes and skin, dark urine, change in the amount of urine, persistent or severe headache, fainting, fast, slow, irregular heartbeat, unusual eye movements or nystagmus, vision changes such as blurred vision, joint pain, swelling of the ankles, feet, pain, redness, swelling or arms of the legs, numbness, tingling of the hands or feet, sun sensitivity, signs of low levels of sodium in the blood such as persistent nausea, extreme drowsiness, mental mood changes including confusion and seizures, depression, suicidal thoughts and attempts, other mental mood problems, symptoms of a serious allergic reaction including rash, itching, swelling, especially of the face, tongue or throat, severe dizziness or trouble breathing. That's the list of possible side effects from just one of those epilepsy medications. So Governor Butch Otter wants to make sure that the child takes three more of those medications before we try the big pharma version of the no THC allowed non-toxic, non-psychoactive oil from a plant. The executive order from Governor Butch Otter came after his veto last April of a medical marijuana bill that had passed both houses of the Idaho legislature with tremendous support. Now, Idaho's Senate had voted 29-5 just 2 years prior on a resolution that the Senate is opposed to efforts to legalize marijuana for any purpose, including what they referred to as a scare quotes medical marijuana initiative. Yet the almost identical Idaho Senate voted 22-12 to approve of limited medical use of CBD oil for epileptic kids. Otter's veto of CBD-only legislation was the first of its kind. CBD-only laws in neighboring Utah in 2014 then spread rapidly to similarly religious rural conservative states like Iowa and the entire South. With Wyoming's recent adoption of a CBD-only law, Idaho finds itself surrounded on the west by fully legal states, Oregon and Washington, to the south and east by medical marijuana states, Nevada and Montana, and CBD-only states, Utah and Washington, and to the north by Canada, which has medical marijuana and, thanks to the recent majority win by the Liberal Party, likely legal marijuana soon. And that's just fine with Idaho's drug czar. Alicia Figueroa, director of Governor Otter's Office of Drug Policy, told the Spokesman Review, quote, "Idahoans are not afraid of being different than their neighbors. I think that they are wanting to protect their way of life," end quote. Well, what way of life was protected when Governor Otter vetoed a CBD-only law and instead only allowed just 25 children of 1,500 to receive life-saving treatment with Big Pharma's version of a CBD oil? Well, according to his veto statement, quote, "There were too many questions and problems," end quote, with the bill. Continuing, quote, "Of course I sympathize with the heartbreaking dilemma facing some families trying to cope with the debilitating impacts of the disease. But the bill asks us to look past the potential misuse and abuse with criminal intent," end quote. Yeah, Governor. We all know what a den of iniquity Utah became after it legalized a cannabis oil that cannot get anyone high. Yeah. Can Governor Otter seriously believe that desperate parents giving their epileptic kids a dose of non-psychoactive cannabis oil is the slippery slope that leads to teenagers doing bong rips while they speed down the freeway on the way to their heroin dealer's house? It boggles the mind. Idaho stands as an island of cruelty amongst the Intermountain states that have finally recognized, even Wyoming, even Utah, that have recognized you don't let a child suffer when you got a non-toxic, non-psychoactive alternative. Not when you've got 15 other states in the South, even, that are letting this happen. You just don't do that. It is loony. My God. Georgia allows CBD oil with up to 5% THC in it. Georgia! And Idaho can't get behind this? That's insane. Too little too late, Governor Otter. Too little too late. Be right back with a mini radical rant, as if that wasn't one.
The Russ Belville Show. The National Wildlife Refuge for Marijuana Unicorns.
Let's talk about the plan to legalize marijuana. The politicians are playing games by calling it a monopoly. They'll do anything to trick voters. It's not a monopoly. It's a plan that initially limits the number of growers for strict regulation before adding more. It provides medical marijuana for those in need. It creates jobs and generates tax revenue. If you think it's time to legalize marijuana, this is our chance. Vote no on 2 and yes on 3.
Oregon has joined Washington and Colorado in legalizing marijuana. We're Portland Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws chapter in Portland, Oregon. Join us as we celebrate the launch of an exciting new era in marijuana freedom in Oregon. Our job has just begun. Powerful interests want to white out the most important portions of Oregon's legalization law. By joining Portland Normal, you add your voice to the thousands who voted for Measure 91 and want it to be implemented as written. The people have spoken. Now it is time for the legislature to obey the will of the people. Find out more about Portland Normal at portlandnormal.org. Attend our monthly membership meetings on the fourth Saturday of the month. See our website for more details. Portland Normal, ensuring responsible adult marijuana consumers are afforded the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities as beer drinkers.
Must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
The Sacramento Bee has a story up entitled Big Money and Frictions Light Up the 2016 Pot Initiative Drive. It's all about the fight to legalize marijuana in California for 2016, and it has me wondering, was 2014 the last year for activist-led marijuana legalization? The story focuses on Sean Parker. He's that billionaire who founded Napster back in the day, and he's also one of the early investors in Facebook, among many other things. He's decided to throw his considerable wealth at drafting a marijuana legalization initiative all his own there in California. It has no history of activism or being involved in it at all, but he's going to fly in and legalize pot in California. And that's left some longtime California legalization activists scrambling, some of whom had already put in well over a decade fighting for marijuana legalization by the time Sean Parker was born, just 28 days before 1980. Reform CA, or Reform California, was supposed to be the activist coalition to champion the legalization fight. It was made up of veterans of the Proposition 19 campaign back in 2010. And Reform CA was supposed to be the cautious mainstream approach to legalization in comparison to some of the more radical approaches, such as the biennially proposed Jack Herer Initiative, or CCHI, the California Cannabis Hemp Initiative, or the slightly less radical MCLR, which is the Marijuana Control Legalization and Revenue Act. Reform CA boasted the support of major California marijuana grower and medical marijuana associations, civil rights leaders like California NAACP President Ms. Alice Huffman, as well as the big established legalization activist groups, Americans for Safe Access, California Normal, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, Students for Sensible Drug Policy, Marijuana Policy Project, or MPP, and Drug Policy Alliance, or DPA. But then MPP and DPA backed out of Reform CA. DPA made some noise about drafting their own initiative language, but now appears to be warming up to the Sean Parker initiative. SF Weekly's Chris Roberts also reports that the New Approach PAC, which bankrolled Oregon's legalization and is funded by the late Peter Lewis's estate, is on board with Parker as well, as well as two Pritzker family Hyatt Hotel heirs. That leaves Reform CA without the big money backers they need, except for a few like Justin Hartfield of Weed Maps, who sits on National Normal's and MPP's boards. The difference would be that Sean Parker shows up as number 268 on the Forbes 400 at $2.5 billion net worth, and Hartfield is still missing that third comma in his net worth. Now, whatever initiative Parker moves forward with, it seems like that would be the front runner for California legalization, just based on the sheer power of money in politics. National players like MPP and DPA were once the gatekeepers to the three-comma club of philanthropic drug reformers Peter Lewis, John Sperling, and George Soros. But now their days as gatekeepers may be numbered, and their influence waning. In just 11 days, 10 wealthy financiers are set to pass marijuana legalization in Ohio that is as much a personal investment as it is a social reform. Billionaires in California are eyeing the world's biggest marijuana market and deciding they can create it themselves without activist help. California's Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom's Blue Ribbon Commission issued a report on how California legalization should proceed, and in it, his commission stated that marijuana legalization, quote, should not be California's next gold rush, end quote. But unless the California Assembly puts forth a marijuana legalization proposition, any initiative fighting for the 2016 ballot will need huge amounts of money, and those billionaires are seeing marijuana gold in them thar hills. I hope we can steer this ship, but man, the money's pouring in so fast. So many people are looking to get in on this. It's going to be difficult, folks. But keep at it. Keep informing your elected officials and these business interests what you want marijuana legalization to look like. We can have an effect. We're not dead yet. All right, stick around. When we come back, we're going to be speaking with former prosecutor Robert Guest out of Kaufman, Texas. He's a speaker for Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. He's going to explain why cops say legalize drugs. We'll be right back.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. This is the Russ Belville Show.
I remember the day Addison was born. She was just perfect. But then the seizures started, up to 1,000 a day from severe epilepsy. Nothing we tried or the doctors tried worked. So we moved our family from Ohio to Colorado to try medical marijuana. Now Addison only has a few seizures a day and she's a kid again. We want to move back to Ohio, but we can't because her medicine is illegal there. It's time for marijuana reform.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs, and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics, Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
At midnight, July 1st, 2015, adult marijuana prohibition came to an end in Oregon. Immediately, over 400,000 adults who consume cannabis responsibly were no longer criminals. This is what freedom sounds like. Brought to you by Portland NORML.
Disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalize drugs.
Welcome back, everybody. Today in our Cops Say Legalize Drugs segment, we're visiting with Robert Guest. He's a former prosecutor currently in Kaufman, Texas. Is that where you were a prosecutor, sir?
I was a prosecutor in Kaufman County and in Texarkana, which is right on the border of Texas and Arkansas. But I was never a cop, but LEAP has former police officers and assistant district attorneys in their organization.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for being on our show, Robert. And just looking at your bio on LEAP's webpage, leap.cc, I picked the thing out immediately that jumps to mind, and that's your understanding of how this drug war has so greatly eroded our Bill of Rights, our civil protections, most of all the Fourth Amendment. Could you give people a little thumbnail sketch of what you saw in your time as a prosecutor and how people's rights were eroded by the drug war?
It goes back even further for me than that. I remember when I was in law school, just sitting through constitutional law and criminal law, and all these Fourth Amendment exceptions appear to basically save drug searches. And you start with things like, well, how long can we keep a car on the side of the road? And what does a drug dog search give us the right to do? And one thing that's ubiquitous in Texas is the, oh, I smell marijuana, so I can search your whole car. Let's start tearing this thing apart. And that assertion is unchallengeable. And from my perspective as a defense lawyer and as a prosecutor, I knew that if the police said those magic words, I smell the odor of marijuana, you know, that they had the right to search in, and there's literally nothing a defendant can do to challenge that later on. I mean, we don't have a way to capture smells on audio or video, and the judge is going to believe the police when they say that. And that's just the most common thing that we see. The other thing that we have are drug dog searches, where the Supreme Court recently ruled that, you know, we're going to just assume if the police give a dog a license that his sniff is probable cause as well. Whereas, you know, they do studies that show just the poor success rate of these drug dogs actually being accurate when it comes to their alert, is what we call them. But things like that, things you can't challenge, things that we let go on every day just to uphold these searches, to save convictions on appeal, have diminished the Fourth Amendment, and it's something we train officers on. We tell them what the loopholes are, and they exploit them when they want to arrest somebody or when they want to search.
That even extends to the beginning of the encounters themselves, where citizens may not be aware that police can lie to you, that police can ask you questions that don't sound like orders, and if you follow them, they have the right to go forward with that. What would you advise people when they're having to deal with cops in Texas, say, when they're first encountering that police officer?
All you need to do in Texas is provide your license and insurance if you're driving. And you don't have to answer any questions, not where you're going, what you're doing, who's with you. If the police ask to search your car, they think there's something illegal in there. They don't just want to see if you're okay to go. And they like to ask it in this form so that it gets kind of a reactionary yes out of you. They go, well, you don't have any drugs or guns or bombs or dead bodies in your car, do you? And you go, no. Well, then is it okay if I search? And it's that. Is it okay if I search? And most people are like, sure, but that's the reaction they want out of you. You need to get used to this phrase, and I'm sure your viewers are aware of this, but it's, am I free to go? Because once you ask that, they got to decide if they have a reason to detain you, and a court can later say that this is a voluntary encounter, a consensual encounter. It's a detention if you're trying to leave, but you have to ask. Another thing viewers need to be aware of is that if you want to remain silent, you have to affirmatively assert that now. Just sitting there quietly isn't enough. So if the police go, hey, where are you coming from? You need to say, I don't want to answer your questions without an attorney. You need to say, I want to remain silent and not answer your question. Now be polite. Don't get out of your car angry or bow up against them. They'll tase you and then lose the video. So be ready, though, to say, no, I want to assert my rights. And you have to do this affirmatively. So am I free to go? Great phrase. I don't want to answer questions without a lawyer. That's another great phrase. And it's okay to say these things. And if the police get angry or upset, you just have to expect that sometimes. But the reason is because they've already profiled you. They've already decided you have contraband somewhere. They just haven't found it. And you've got to be smarter than that. So I would encourage your listeners to use those phrases and be as calm as possible and don't make any sudden movements, keep your hands in sight. Otherwise, you might be a victim of police violence.
Well, we're speaking with Robert Guest, a former prosecutor who's now turned away from the dark side. He's a criminal defense lawyer. And check out his website as well, iwasthestate.com. And, you know, you touched upon another aspect of this drug war that's very pernicious, and that is the way it's infected and corrupted our police forces. I mean, you casually tossed off how somebody get tased and they'd lose the video. But I mean, how pernicious is that within Texas law enforcement?
Well, what you find, and this is something that's really kind of been a game changer, is the proliferation of videos. We have body cameras now. Almost every law enforcement agency that I'm involved with has recordings in their car, where just 10 years ago, this wasn't as ubiquitous. And so, you know, video malfunctions were a lot more common, and they're being met with more skepticism now than they used to be when we were doing, you know, when we had VCR videos, they were still handing out VHS tapes, mm-hmm. you know, at DA's offices. And so that has been an improvement. There's been such a sea change in public awareness of police misconduct. And when I started talking about this, when I first got out, people were reluctant to believe it. And the cell phone camera has changed everything because people can see that police will lie to help other police officers. We had a situation in Dallas where there was a shooting of a mentally ill person, and his partner went ahead and lied about what happened, you know, before the actual officer who shot this guy gave a statement. It was just reflexive that he was going to cover up for this guy. And so, you know, you don't want to be a victim of that. You need to assume you're on camera. As soon as those lights go on, that's when most cameras come on. Some are just always on now. But it's a bigger issue now if something is missing, and juries are even more aware of this. You can go to a jury now and tell them, where's this video? What has happened? And a lot of them will become cynical, where especially in my smaller counties, I mean, they're extremely pro-law enforcement. But people are aware to a greater degree than ever that you can't just take the word of the police, especially when there's some sign of impropriety. And that has been a big improvement.
So to what degree would reforming the drug laws have on fixing that? Or is that something that's going to be a bigger problem than just changing this corruption in the drug war?
Oh, not at all. I mean, so many things stop when you end prohibition, from the militarization of law enforcement, where your vast majority of home invasions, SWAT team raids are looking for dope, from the fact that you can pad your stats as a department or an officer by making cheap, you know, drug busts on the side of the road, which makes you look like you're productive when you're just, you know, pulling people over and tricking them into letting you search. And it's such a huge opportunity cost, in that we spend so many millions of hours arguing over searches, stops, possession, constructive possession, you know, who had what? It was in the console, whose is it? And they arrest everybody in the car. And it would change the law enforcement culture, because it's an us versus them mentality. And a lot of these police officers, some of them don't think about the larger consequences of what they're doing. But I would encourage your listeners to go to your local police department and try to find their crime clearance rates. The FBI keeps these, and you'll see burglary, you know, assault, murder, you know, 40, 30, 20% of those are getting solved. Why is that? Well, because we are spending so much time on the side of the road digging for drugs and going busting the grow house, and it's such a huge cost to society. It would change the law enforcement culture if the people they were trying to get weren't, you know, casual drug users or your neighborhood, you know, drug seller. If you're going after people who had victimized someone else, which I think most Americans would agree that should be a priority. But the other problem is, who do the feds give money to? We used to have those burn drug grants, and those were a disaster, where it was a make-work project. You make enough drug busts, you get government cash. And then we send them military gear to do it. It's been such a problem, and it keeps getting worse. And only recently, which we got to give the president credit for this, but you know, Barack Obama went to a federal prison and met with some inmates. And, you know, sentencing reform is an issue in the Senate now, which it used to just never get brought up. Things are changing. And if you thought it was hopeless to get involved, or that we couldn't, you know, change minds about the drug war or marijuana prohibition, this is the time. This was an argument when I would talk about this 10 years ago. People thought I was nuts. They thought I was crazy. You know, you're some crazy libertarian. Nobody wanted to hear this. But now it's reached the public consciousness. This is our moment. This is the sea change. And it's just a matter of when we end the worst public policy of my lifetime.
That's right. We're speaking with Robert Guest, a former prosecutor and now a speaker for law enforcement against prohibition in Texas. And his website is iwasthestate.com. Check that out as well. You got all sorts of speakers for law enforcement against prohibition, former prosecutors, prison guards, police themselves, detectives, all sorts. There's one near you. Just go to leap.cc if you want more information on getting a speaker for your local event. Now, Robert, I know these weren't in your county, at least I don't think so, but I've reported at least three times now on police in Texas, Harris County, the most recent, the Charnisia Coley case, doing unspeakable things to women on the side of the road in the search for marijuana. How has the reaction been in Texas to this, and is that starting to fuel some people's want for change?
Well, if there was an incident in North Texas around where I practiced where they were doing roadside body cavity searches, and the idea that the DPS trooper could think it's a great idea to reach into someone's anal cavity to look for drugs just shows you how, when you have this militarized mindset, you dehumanize American citizens. They're the enemy. Who cares what they think? Who cares if we humiliate them? It becomes an us versus them mentality. And so it's easy to victimize these people. And we had an incident. We thought it was isolated. Now it's coming out that this happened more times than we thought. And the legislature in the last session actually had to pass a law saying, if you want to search a body cavity, now you have to get a warrant. As if that wasn't clear enough before, the legislature came in to fix it. And we're talking about the Texas legislature. This is an extremely right-wing legislature. But one of the strange bedfellows of this Tea Party movement we have and this conservatism, especially the new conservatism in Texas, is there's a cynicism about government power and its ability to just always be the right thing to do is to arrest people or have the government intervene. And that's extending for the first time to law enforcement and district attorney's offices. And if we had more time to talk, we could get into corrupt prosecutors and Brady material, because that's now just starting to be an issue where, like I said, 10 years ago, nobody had thought about it.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to have that on the next opportunity we get to speak. I'm sure we'll have you back. Robert Guest, appreciate what you're doing, illuminating this from your perspective, having, you know, seen the belly of the beast. Thank you so much, and good luck on your next speaking engagements.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to your listeners.
Thank you. All right. Stay tuned, folks. We've got our anti-drug public service announcement of the day, followed by our live in-studio guest, Lindsay Reinhart here from Oregon, Teresa Collins from Alaska, and more right here on the Russ Belville Show.
To the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
I know a thing or two about drug dealers. They'll sell anything, anywhere, to anyone. They don't check IDs. They don't care what's in the poison they push. They control the streets. Failing to reform marijuana laws means the drug dealers win. They stay in business, and we surrender our streets. It's time for responsible reform to legalize, regulate, and control marijuana. So we're in charge, not the criminals. Vote yes on 3.
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
Look, man, best dope you can buy. Try it.
I don't know. Hey, here comes Jessica and the Ghostbusters.
Hey, you guys want to try some dope?
No.
No.
race. When it comes to the question of drugs, friends or not, the only right answer is no.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belville Show every weekday on 420radio.org. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org. You're listening to 420radio.org, your 24-hour cannabis community radio.
Activism begins with ACT. The Russ Belville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
All right, welcome back. We got such great guests in studio live with us. Lindsay Reinhart is here. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi.
And we've got Teresa Collins from Alaska here. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, Russ.
And we've got everyone else here whose names I've forgotten because something happened to my short-term memory. So help me out.
You've got Lee Haywood, Josh Bird, and Jessica Jansen.
Lee, Josh, and Jessica. Thank you guys for being here. Let's start with Teresa down here from Alaska because, you know, frankly, the being in Oregon, we get a lot of news on Oregon legalization. And nationwide, I don't think people hear a lot of what's going on in Alaska. We just had our first stores, you know, and our dispensaries are open and everything's thriving. What's the story in Alaska?
So right now, they're finalizing the regulations. The Marijuana Control Board in Alaska is going to have their last meeting to finalize the regs on November 20th. So, and right now, they're trying to prohibit marijuana clubs, which I own Potluck Events.
Yes.
And Josh here owns Green Rush Events. So, of course, that's something that's near and dear to our heart. So we've been joining forces with a lot of people that are planning on going to the industry to get our voices heard for fair regulations for anything from the percentage of THC. They're trying to limit it to 76% in concentrates. And then in edibles, 5 milligrams is going to be the limit per serving.
They're trying to do that here in Oregon, too.
Right.
I testified against it.
Yeah. Now, Josh, you're with Green Rush, right?
That's correct.
What are they telling you when they're saying they want to ban these clubs? What's their rationale? What do they say?
When they say they want to ban the clubs?
Yeah, what's their excuse? What's the problem?
I don't know what the problem is, really. It's just it all started with the letters from Cynthia Franklin.
Yeah. It's fear and propaganda, you know. That's all it is. They're scared of it because they don't know what it is.
But like, there's no story of, oh my God, somebody wrecked their car when they left your event or something. There's nothing to pin this on. They're just afraid.
Yeah, they're afraid of what they don't know. But what we're trying to do is we're really trying to work with them. We're trying to work with the Marijuana Control Board, with our legislatures, you know, with city officials, state officials across the board to try to show them what a good industry, a responsible industry can look like for Alaska. But one of the biggest problems that we have in Alaska is that we have no medical infrastructure.
Right.
So the people that, you know, really voted this in, that are the people that are medical users, feel left behind. And now, right now, the way they're drafting the regulations, they're basically saying there's no difference between recreational and medical. So that's another battle that's going to be ahead of us in the future as well.
Now, you mentioned that 5 milligram limit. This is, the edibles issue. And after the whole Maureen Dowd incident in Colorado, Colorado went and made a limit of 10 milligrams per portion, 100 milligrams per package of edible products. When you're going to get your THC, it'd be that much. So Lindsay, medical patient, tell us about why this 5 nanogram idea, they're trying to do this, or 5 milligram.
It's actually different.
It's 5 milligrams per serving for recreational, up to 50, so yeah. 10 doses. But it's 10 milligrams to 100 for medical, which I still testified against because I personally consume about 500 milligrams in one edible, no problem. And working in dispensaries over the last year and a half, I've dispensed medication to people who need higher dose medications, and they thrive on something that is 500 plus milligrams. So to tell a cancer patient who may only be able to eat one thing that day that they can't get the most out of their medicine or their food as possible is ludicrous. They're not doctors, they're legislators. And so that's where I kind of draw the line, yeah.
Yeah, and this is a reaction, and I always say, there's an old saying that bad cases make for bad laws. Mm-hmm. And it's a situation where you get this scare of the recreational side, or maybe a kid or whoever gets a hold of a brownie or whatever, and it's more than they're expecting. It's, oh, it's 65, and they're in, you know, they're having a panic attack. But it goes away, and nobody's hurt from it. It does go away. And in reaction to that, we want to slap down a law that hurts the most vulnerable, right? It's not going to hurt me, the rec guy. I'll go get 3 cookies. I'm cool with that. But the cancer patient, like you said, why right. are you going to try and
or
force that on
we
them?
We can go back to prohibition. Are there going to be a bunch of, like, are we going to have cookie cartels and have, like, the biggest, highest dose edibles that people are going to pay for, black market?
Yeah.
You know?
And I've always had the issue with, like, having the medical be greater than the rec. Have it all be the same. Otherwise, you just incentivize people to want to, like, hey, I'll get my medical friend to buy me, you know, the medical grade rather than going into the rec store. As any this these attempts to try to differentiate, there's recreational consumers who like 500 milligram cookies too.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Well, it's not going to hurt my feelings if they stimulate our medical program by going and getting their cards so they can get the things that they'd like.
Well right? put. Okay. Well put. So Teresa, what are we going to do for Alaska? I mean, what's it looking like as far as what your regulations will be for stores and such?
So, you know, there's a lot of good thought that's been put into it. They've looked to Colorado. They've looked to Washington. But I think a lot of the regulations, they're definitely going to have to change within the first year. They're trying to communicate with industry folks, but they're not really listening to them. They're just starting to. So that's kind of nice. We're starting to see a transition of them actually taking our public comment and listening to us and dialoguing with us about what we think that the industry should look like in Alaska. So I think that's, we're moving in a positive direction, but again, you know, it's the fear. They don't know what's going to happen, but you guys have an amazing setup here, and we're super excited to bring home the information about Oregon to our regulators in Alaska and talk about, hey, these are the things that are working here, and, you know, hopefully we can all join together as states and work together on having fair regulations in all of our states that are going to work, because we're the ones that are the most educated on it, because we're the ones that have been living it.
No kidding. Now, they're trying to make your kind of club illegal. What kind of club is your kind of club? I mean, is it volunteer run? Is there alcohol served? What's the parameters for you?
There's no alcohol served. It is basically owner ran, but our members, it's all of our members club. So we do have a lot of members that volunteer to help and will bring things into the club, but we don't sell any cannabis. It's a consumption only. It's a sharing club. So
it's a private club. It's like an Elks club.
Exactly. It's like the cigar clubs we have in downtown Anchorage as well, or in Anchorage as well. So
it's a cannabis friendly club and lounge.
Yeah. So it's always odd to me that the people have a problem with that. And at the same time, they have a problem with public consumption. We don't want to see you consuming outside or in the parks or anything. Okay. Can we go inside in this private building of ours with just our club? No. By God, no.
Exactly.
So wouldn't that just go back to cannabis bigotry? Because you're more than welcome to step into any bar that's every, you know, 25 feet, and it's socially acceptable to go in and consume a substance that you can wreck your car and die in.
Yeah.
But we can't go peacefully consume something that wears off much faster than alcohol and doesn't have toxic effects. It seems more reasonable to me, as someone who will stand outside in public and consume cannabis, to give me a place to do it privately.
And that's why it's so important to really open up the social aspect of what this is. And these clubs are doing that right now. So to get more people involved, to come down and see what it looks like in comparison to alcohol, one of the major contributors that we have that are a huge ill in Alaska right now, especially amongst our Alaska natives.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. And you got other interesting dilemmas to solve in Alaska with just the sheer size of the state and having to go either air travel or water travel, which is still federally controlled. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So what we saw in regulations that a lot of the cities that you can only get to by boat or plane are wanting really fair regulations because they want people in their community to be able to have access. So there's a lot of hurdles, especially in the villages in Alaska, because they're not going to have the energy to be able to support huge commercial grows in these villages to support the usage there. So it's going to be really interesting. I mean, even if every home there gets their own little home grow, it's going to put such a strain on the electricity that's available there, and it's going to be very interesting to see how it goes in the future.
There's that too, the difference in the growing season. So far north, you'd have to grow indoors
they're allowing a little bit of outdoor growing in the regulations, but most of our marijuana is grown indoors in Alaska, so it's really controlled environments.
Well, I enjoyed what Alaskan marijuana I was able to sample the last time I was there. Anchorage was beautiful. You guys have a great thing, and let's hope we can move forward on this. One last question. If you get high enough, can you see Russia from your house?
Yeah.
I was wondering if maybe she knew something she wasn't saying.
Maybe if you stand on the roof of our building and you have a huge telescope and smoke enough Alaskan weed.
Yeah. Maybe so. Well, Lindsay Reinhart, shout outs or websites you want to let people know about before we go?
Not that I can think of, but I'll be in Alaska next week, and I think that are we going to call in?
You can call in from Alaska. Awesome. That'd be great. All right.
Yeah, so she's doing a tour up in Alaska. We're giving her the Alaska Canada Tour, and she's been giving us the Oregon Canada Tour.
That's great. So, Teresa, any websites or Facebooks, anything we can give out?
Yeah, definitely www.potluckeventsak.com. And if you just look up Potluck Events AK on Facebook as well, also Instagram, Potluck AK.
All right, Josh, Jessica, anybody else?
You can find Green Rush Events on Facebook and also check out our website, akgreenrush.com.
All right.
AlaskaGreenRush.com.
So that's everybody? Got one?
Canna Farm Co-op on Facebook and Canna Farm Co-op on Instagram as well.
Canna Farm Co-op.
Cannabis Emissary still out here planting these seeds of knowledge.
Right on, right on. All right. Thank you guys so much for being here in the studio. And that's all the time we got for our podcast hour. But stay tuned for hour two, Toker Talk Radio. I'll be hanging out here and covering more of the latest in cannabis news and information. Plus, we'll have more speakers from the Virginia Normal Conference. I just got back from Richmond, Virginia last weekend. We'll hear some more from the reformers out there in one of the reddest of the red states. For Lindsay and Teresa and everyone else here at Roller J Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.